under. Morris Mizalowski is no stranger to the morning's program. In fact, he was a regular on this program last year. He's based in Melbourne, but today he joins me a metre away here in our Gold Coast Mermaid Beach studios. Hello.
Hello.
You're here for an aged care conference and some interesting messages that you'll be presenting literally in about an hour and a half, so we'll get to that. But the future of media, I want to start not talking media reform, but rather how we'll be digesting our media in years to come, which affects a lot of people, including those who talk on the radio. Firstly, something that's happening next week, I believe, The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald joining the Oz for paywalls. So instead of being able to check out your news for free online, that privilege will be no longer available. You're still a little bit sceptical about how successful this is going to be.
Yeah, I am. I mean, we've seen it across the world over the last few years. It seems to have been a knee-jerk reaction to how we will take a physical object, which is the newspaper, something people were happy to pay for and used to pay for. I mean, nobody ever thought of stealing it, hopefully, and putting it online. And, of course, online we have a different philosophy. Not a better one and not a good one, but online we believe that things should be for free. That's the cultural norm. So when you try and put something online like news and then you ask people to pay for it, there's this huge disconnect. It doesn't make sense in people's mind. And often they go around it. So if I can't get the article from that source, somebody else has usually put it up or somebody else is talking about it. So they'll more often than not go somewhere else that's free to get that article. That doesn't mean it can't work, but I don't think it can work in the pure sense that they think, which is just a pure transference.
How would it work then? Is it a matter of everybody doing it so that the only way you can get your news online is by paying for it?
That would be good, but it's not going to work because everybody is more than everybody has ever been before, meaning that everybody is not just the newspaper industry. It's not just that part of the world. It's me, it's you, it's every individual who decides they want to comment on something, who wants to put it up or talk to their Facebook or their LinkedIn or whatever else. So how do you get everybody on the planet to agree to play this game? The notion is that what we need to get away from is selling information, selling data, and data to me or information is the lowest order. What we need to sell is wisdom. What people will pay for is really good insightful insights into what does this mean to me. Give me something that I can't get anywhere else, something I really value, and then I'm happy to put my hand in my pocket for you.
And would that form be a blog?
It might be. But
somebody would pay for. I can't imagine someone paying for a blog.
They may not pay for a blog. We need to also get away from the model of, you know, paying on whole. So maybe $1.50 for a newspaper. This is going to be trickle income, I think, at best. Trickle income is what Google made its money from. In other words, it said we're never going to make dollars, but we can make cents. We can charge a cent or 2 cents or 3 cents. And if we get a couple of billion of those, we've made some good money. So that's the difference that we need to go to. I think what we need to do in this space is to give away as much as it might hurt us, a lot of the information, but sell the wisdom. If you want to connect up, if you want to learn more about it, if you want to learn who it is and where it is and why it is, that's what you're going to have to pay a bit more for.
On 91.7 ABC Coast FM, Morris Mizalowski, futurist. He's here to talk about aged care technology, and we'll get to that in just a moment. With regards to the future of the media, what you find fascinating is how content will be created and what constitutes news.
Yeah, and that's a really big cultural shift because news over the last couple of hundred years, and this is not a bad thing, it's been the way that we've asked for it and wanted it, over the last couple of hundred years has been dictated by a few people. It's been dictated by people that were able to have the resources to spread the message. So we had Gutenberg's press that came along a couple of hundred years ago. All of a sudden people became literate. They wanted to read. They read books. They read newspapers. And they also used to hear from the pulpit and the church and the local town criers. Those people dictated what we heard. As we've said already this morning, we're having billions of people now dictate what news is. And people are choosing the exact niches that they want to hear about. They're able now to hear from people across the planet literally at any time, any space that they wanted. There's far more choice. There's a smorgasbord out there of what is created and what media can be. So it's a real decentralisation. We have fractured communication now.
Which at this moment in time goes against the centralised newspapers that are online. So are they going to die out one day? How will they keep up with these changes to remain relevant?
I think they're going to become increasingly less relevant. I think what we're going to find is that the traditional newspaper Monday to Friday will die out in the next decade, and what we will have is more and more local newspapers, so really close regional local newspapers that interest people, and then we're going to see weekend newspapers. And the reason for that is midweek, most of us don't have a lot of time to sit down and read a paper, and we're quite happy to pick up the news along the way, on the bus, on the train, you know, whatever it is, in little bites. We don't need to sit down in front of a whole paper. But on the weekend, many of us like that cup of coffee, like that 1 or 2 hours or whatever it is, that little oasis on that day to sit and read and really digest good information.
And you think that hard copy will still be popular with bacon and eggs as opposed to a tablet with bacon and eggs?
I do for lots of people. Now, this is not an everybody conversation anymore because there is choice now. So I think that increasingly we're going to find more and more people will be comfortable with a digital image of it. But I do think, you know, literally for the next 10, 15, 20 years, there'll always be people that want to sit down and with something that unfolds and has more tactile around it. And I know that there are digital readers that are a bit more tactile. I get all of that. But there are people of my vintage who kind of like that notion of sitting down. It's not really the paper itself. It's what it represents.
When was the last time you bought a paper?
Don't ask me, because I don't buy papers. So I'm the worst of that. But I haven't bought papers for years and years because most of my news is digested online. The only time I read newspapers, I must say, is in the flight lounges when I have that little bit of an oasis of a time. So what I'm talking about is really what I do most often. When I've got that time, that half hour or so, I love to sit down with a physical piece.
It's so hard, Maurice Mizalowski, not to get a little bit nostalgic. And maybe this naturally happens when you get older. But when I was growing up, I grew up in Brisbane. There was a paper in the morning, so you had your Courier Mail. And then there was an afternoon paper that had a different name. I can't quite remember what it is now. So you'd get two papers. Mm. So there, obviously that finally died out, but it was there for quite a long time. So obviously there was a readership there. So we've gone from two papers, a morning edition and an afternoon edition, to possibly no edition.
Absolutely. And I remember the same thing. I mean, we had the Herald and the Sun, or the Sun and the Herald, the Sun being the morning one. Again, that was perfect for its time. Remember, at that time, it was hard to get up-to-date news, and we actually had a few editions of each of them. So it wasn't unusual to pick up a morning paper and then a couple of hours later to get different headlines in the same newspaper. That was perfect because at that time, it was the only way to get great news, apart from radio, of course, and television. Nowadays, we don't need that immediacy. We don't need somebody to actually print something to tell us anything because we can find it out much quicker. By the time it's printed, it's actually old news.
And of course, digital radio too is changing the landscape of what people can listen to and when, and they can be a lot more specific about, you know, what meets their hunger for information.
I think so, but I also think radio, not because we're on it, not because it's politically correct to say this in front of you, but I think radio is the purest form of communication moving forward because it offers all the things that we're looking for. It's immediate. There's talkback, there's the ability to follow a story as it's unfolding. All of those things can happen on radio. They don't happen in any of the other traditional mediums as well. Television's too cumbersome. I know that it tries to get to the story immediately, but it has to break into other things. It's not in the nature of it, unless it's a pure news story. But radio actually is close to it, and a lot of the models we have online, the blogs and the rest of it, kind of follow along that.
Before I let you go, and I know you've got to get ready, the presentation you're giving at the aged care conference here on the coast, what technology is helping us cope with the fact we're an ageing population?
There are some really interesting technologies. Now, I want to put it into context to say that we're not looking to warehouse people of my vintage who are getting a bit older and put them in the care of all these machines and robots. That's not what we're after at all. What we're saying is really admitting that we are an ageing population, that we're going to live far longer than we did before, 120 or so, live in relatively good health, and have needs that are traditionally different from our parents and grandparents. We want to live at home, for instance. We most probably will have less ailments, less physical issues than we did before. What we need is assistance. And a lot of new stuff, new technologies are around to do that. There are some really interesting robots coming out of Japan, and Japan is the great place to look for robots in aged care because they have that acute need right now. There are robots that wash patients' hair. I know that sounds really strange, but it's one of those mundane, really important chores that make people feel better about themselves. What we're doing at the moment is where people are doing that, and that's not a bad thing, but it's a costly thing. These robots are actually very, very good, and I know it sounds a step too far, I get that. But when you see them in operation and you see people being washed, the hair being washed, it's actually a joyous activity. They actually quite like
that. Do they do scalp massages?
Yes.
Love those.
Yes. So we have those. I mean, we have lots of those. We have interesting robots that pick patients up and walk them around. Now, literally lift them off the bed when they can't hold them while the bed's being made, or move them onto another bed, or put them into their wheelchair, or do other things. Again, that makes sense because we have the OH&S issues. We have all kinds of issues around moving people. We also have the issue around people waiting in their bed for somebody else to come and move them. So it gives them some autonomy. We've got fascinating things like magic carpets that are on the horizon. A magic carpet is in fact the underfelt that you put into a carpet that has wires in it. And what it does is it learns the gait of the people walking around. So if there is a fall, or if they're not walking properly, or they're not walking at the appropriate time, in other words, I know they should be out of bed at 9 o'clock and there's no movement yet, it actually escalates an inquiry. So if it feels that there's something happening, it might get a carer in, or it might get a loved one in, or a doctor in, again, depending on what's happened. We're going to be able to monitor our homes. We're already starting to do that. And this is all with people's permission. This is not Big Brother watching. So with permission, we'll be able to monitor homes. We'll literally be able to watch people if we want. But what we will do is not to watch. But we will monitor in the sense that we will know people walking around. So we will have sensors around the home that know people's normal routine.
So someone suffers from dementia, for example, and they've gone walking. It can happen.
Or not taking their tablets. We'll actually know people have not taken their tablets and we'll be able to do something about that. We'll know they've not eaten because the food hasn't been moved. So there's lots of technologies we're going to find in our home in the not-too-distant future.
Very exciting stuff. Maurice Mizalowski, enjoy your time here on the coast.
I will, as always.
Futurist and the man who is speaking about technology and the future of aged care here on the coast.